Good evening, everyone. It is June 18th, and this is the meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Welcome to all of you at home and in the audience. We do have a quorum, although we are missing two of our members this evening. Deborah Owen and David Sozino are not able to be with us, but we are moving forward. So we'll begin with a moment of silence. So we will move forward. We will open public comment for anybody who has comments to make before us that are not on items of the agenda. We will have public comment for each item after we receive the report. So is there any member of the public that wishes to come and comment at this point? Okay, we'll close public comment. Next, we need to approve the minutes from our April 16th meeting. Has everybody had a chance to look at those?
Yes.
My only comment about it was I noticed that we make reference to YouTube videos, and I'm wondering if we could have just a little bit more meat to the minutes. Is that possible?
This is direction from the city manager on how to tailor the minutes for the council and advisory boards.
Oh, I was noticing that in the last city council minutes that I reviewed, there was a little bit more discussion than just the reference. But if this is a directive,
we'll pass that request on to.
Well,
Dave.
It's a personal preference, but if no one else has trouble with it,
I was going to say real quick. Actually, I found it works very well because on my phone I could sit there and put in the Morro Bay channel on my YouTube, and it brings up every item that the city puts on YouTube, and you could sit there and click on any meeting at any time. You do have to work your way through it as you go to try and find that location, but if you use these links that they show on here, it'll take you directly to that location.
We aren't all that technologically adept, unfortunately. All right. Director's report. We have the director's report. Did you wish to give that or just have us look review
it? We've got to do the consent agenda.
Oh, we need to approve the minutes.
Yes,
sorry.
Exactly.
Sorry about that. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move that we approve the minutes of the last PWAB meeting.
And a second?
I second it.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Director's report. We have received a written director's report. Did you wish to add anything to that, or do we have any questions from board members about the report?
I'll highlight one or two items before we go to questions. The water report, we're expanding a little bit with Damaris's talk on water conservation, so that's why you don't see the statistics in here on this one. On the wastewater project, our new water reclamation facility, it wasn't a tentative date. We actually did interview consultants on June 16th, and we are now preliminarily negotiating with the top consultant, and since I told both of them, I'll make it public. The unanimously recommended consultant was Black & Veatch of their Walnut Creek office, and the other consultant that we interviewed was Corollo Engineers, I believe also out of a Walnut Creek office, and so now we're starting to negotiate a scope and fee with Black & Veatch, and we'll bring that to our Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee for a presentation on the final scope and fee and a recommendation to City Council to award that contract. We're also moving forward with selection of consultants for program management and environmental review. And we have a pre-proposal meeting with for those two sets of consultants tomorrow. I think that's it for highlights. And we have some additional staff here at this meeting in case there's questions that instead of me making something up, or not that I would do that, but we have the right person here for the answers.
Very good. Should we start with Jan? Do you have any questions on the director's report?
Just one, Rob. When is the next meeting for the WRFCAC? You said you were going to present things.
Oh, thank you. Those meetings are the second Wednesday of each month, so
it's around the 8th or the 10th. I can't remember. It's a Wednesday, second Wednesday.
Of July.
At what time?
3 p.m., 3 to 5, in the community center multipurpose room.
Okay. Thank you.
And we would follow that with the first and only meeting of the City Council in July. So we'll be seeing the City Council on, I might as well bring that calendar up so I can. The 9th of July is the WRFCAC meeting, and then the City Council meeting would be the 14th of July for recommendation to award the contract.
Okay.
Steven.
Not really anything. On the streets and sidewalks, I'm glad to see there is sidewalk going in down there on Market Street. I think it's long overdue.
That's being funded through our CDBG money that we receive from participation with the Urban Counties program.
Oh, so very good. That's it for me.
No comment.
Stu.
Just one comment. Does street trees also include cacti?
I wouldn't classify those as a street tree. They were a maybe a statement by a group of folks. I don't know. But we're going to be talking with the group that we think might have planted those about what should be done. I don't recommend expending any city forces removing those. Those are thornless prickly pears, so and they're going to be pretty slow growing, so I think by the time we get ready to plant, we'll get some free prickly pears out of the deal.
Now, there are restrictions on the street trees and planting and watering, aren't there? You can't water those, right?
We can water, still water, as long as you meet the odd even watering dates.
Oh, okay.
So, and I don't think those prickly pears actually need any water.
Yeah, don't ever grab one. The spines will stay in your fingers forever. That's all.
I just have one question. And it has to do with Cayucas dropping out of the facility. What is the implication for the sewer rates that we just put into effect?
It doesn't affect the existing rates. So we anticipate that we have enough coverage to bring us through design build. When we go for our SRF funding, our state revolving fund through the state, we'll need to relook at rates at that time anyway, so if there are rate implications. But it's really too premature to make a big adjustment in the rates based on this. We need more detailed cost estimates before we would move that along. And I think we were pretty conservative in our estimates with the existing facility, with the 30% contingency and rather generous allowances for engineering, admin, and the unknowns at this point in time.
Okay. And it's my understanding that you were still approaching Cayucas and still trying to involve them if possible. Is that correct?
We are not actively negotiating with Cayucas. We will be leaving the door open to Cayucas to come on board if they so choose, if as a result of their studies find that it's more cost effective to continue the partnership, whatever that partnership is, with Morro Bay. But the Cayucas Sanitary District did make a presentation to the Scenic Board of Realtors yesterday at their meeting, and they're moving full speed ahead with their sites, and according to their board president, they really have no intention of coming back.
Thank you. Can we have a motion to...
It's a receive and file.
It's just receive
yeah.
and file.
Receive,
yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Rob, if they opt out and decide not to be part of this and so on, and wish to be a customer for a given period of time, then they don't, whatever we set for rates in our city is what they pay. Is that correct?
They would probably pay a different rate than our city citizens would pay, because our rates include, we can only charge what it costs to provide that service. So we're not providing collection system services for them. They have their own collection system maintenance. So there would have to be some calculation for just treatment costs and conveyance in the major trunk lines. So it wouldn't be exactly the same as our customer rates.
Thank you. We have no old business, but we have a request to move item C2 to be the first item that we consider. Is that satisfactory with the board members?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So the first thing we will hear is a presentation of the water conservation strategies and proposed rebates by Damaris.
Thank you. Yes, this evening I'm going to talk about water conservation update and then a brief discussion on some proposed rebates. So I think we're all aware that we're in a drought. I think the whole state has done pretty well of getting that education out there. Historically, Morro Bay has done pretty well in conserving. This is shows historic use from 2007 to current. And in our highest usage of water in 1970 was 193 gallons per capita. And now in 2014, we're at 103 gallons per capita. So we've been in a conservation mode for quite some time. May, our water usage was 94 gallons per capita. That's about half of what it was in 1970. Oh, and you can see there's one large spike in there. It's actually just a leak, but normally you kind of see the trend that we follow.
And each one of those curves is a separate year, so mm-hmm. is how we've displayed that data.
I tried to make the last 3 years or the darker dashed ones, so you can kind of see those kind of stand out a little more. The orange one is 2014, so you can see that's lower in most of the time, most of the year. So a brief timeline of how we got here and where we are now. In January 17, 2014, Governor Brown first declared a state of emergency throughout the state of California for severe drought conditions. January 28, 2014, Morro Bay increased its level of water conservation from moderately restricted to severely restricted conditions. These restrictions included outdoor water use restrictions to 2 days a week, and limited the times of water use outdoors, among with many other restrictions in there. The city then started our public education, and we distributed education material to all our water customers, letting them know what the provisions and restrictions were. We gave education material to the restaurants that they can only serve water upon request, and the hotels were provided with cards to give to their customers on different ways that they could save water. Excuse me. On April 25th, 2014, the governor issued a second executive order redoubling the drought actions. The main thing he got from that was basically he said you have to conserve 20% statewide. That's a voluntary reduction at that point. And also then all of the water purveyors at that time have to report monthly on how much water we produce and how much gallons per capita per day residential users use. On May 13, 2014, the city of Morro Bay declared a local emergency due to state water deliveries of 35% or less. April 1st, Governor Brown issued another executive order mandating urban water conservation of 25%. This was a mandatory 25% statewide. On May 5th, the State Water Resources Control Board adopted emergency regulations according to the governor's directive. the provisions of this went into effect on May 18th. They were adopted in June 2015. That production numbers is the numbers that we have to start reducing our amounts by. These are the state regulations. They're very similar to our Muni Code regulations. One major difference is outdoor irrigation during and 48 hours following measurable precipitation. There's also using potable water to irrigate ornamental turf on public street medians is not allowed. We don't really have that in this area, but we have reduced or actually cut the water off on a lot of our ornamental turf in parks and the Vets Hall, for example.
And you can see that. I think there's a sign out front that talks about us doing our part. So every place that we've cut off the water, we put up one of those brown grass signs to show that. The outdoor irrigation 48 hours following measurable precipitation would be something that we would need to amend into our municipal code to be consistent with regulations, although the governor's statewide regulations are enforceable by the city. So we don't need to do anything, but if we want to be consistent, we would need to amend our local regs.
So a recap of where we are now. The restrictions that went into effect in May, they set tiers on restrictions amount, so everyone's not having to reduce 25%. Basically, the higher users have to reduce more, the lower users have to reduce less. That basis was made in July, August, and September of 2013, so your summer months of 2013 before we started conserving. Morro Bay was at a residential gallons per capita per day of 70. So that put us in a tier three. Morro Bay has to reduce 12%. That equals 61 gallons per capita for residential. The goal of meeting the 12% has to be a state or a total production. It's not just a residential number. So that's what the table on the left is showing. It's showing our percent use reduction in production and then our percent reduction in residential use. So you can see the residential use has gone down the 12%, but we're not meeting our overall statewide goal because our total production is only at 10% less. Residential use is about 70% of our total production. Commercial is about 22%. Cities like 4 and schools are about 4. So the majority of the water is used by the residents, so it basically equates to the residential use has got to be reduced less than 12% in order to make up that difference in the total production reduction.
And we continue education on with our commercial users. I think Damaris passed out some of the sample materials that we're using. We also have the added benefit of measuring this reduction during our peak tourist season. So when we have the most commercial use in town, we have to reduce the most. The way the state did it, I don't believe is fair for us, but it was difficult to make it fair for everybody in their reduction requirements.
Okay, so if we're not meeting that goal, what else can we do? Here's four proposed rebates that we're proposing for tonight. We have a cash for grass, basically removing turf grass, replacing with drought-tolerant plants, 50 cents per square foot, minimum of $100, a maximum of $500. A irrigation retrofit, so if you have overhead irrigation and you want to change it to drip irrigation, that's a $25 or 25 cents per square foot, so a minimum of $25 and maximum of $100 rebate. A smart irrigation controller, and basically a smart irrigation controller, it doesn't just like a regular irrigation controller. You set the time and the date, and it just waters all those times. This one uses rain data, and it senses when the plants or the ground needs the water and adjusts it, so therefore it's smarter. Then a rain barrel. Oh, and that smart irrigation controller is a $100 rebate. The rain barrel, if you buy a rain barrel and install it, it's a $50 rebate. These rebates are being proposed not being proposed retroactive. So if someone replaced their grass a few months ago or a year ago, they wouldn't qualify for the rebate. And we're also doing one rebate per parcel because you could see if someone took out their grass and they had put in drought-tolerant plants, they would be putting in drip, too, so they could get the irrigation retrofit. But we're trying to limit it to one parcel so that we can share the limited amount of money that we would be able to have for this program. And what else do I have here? I don't know. Some other things we can do, there's more public education that we can, publication outreach. I brought the new material that we'll be handing out to the restaurants. We just got them today. We have new table tents and little stickers for the menu that they can put near the water, near the drinks that, you know, only serve water upon request. We gave material to the restaurants previously. These are much more attractive than the first ones we gave out, so they probably were a little more likely to be seen around. And with the hotels, we have a mirror clean that goes on the mirror, and it's removable. So, it says that if you want your towels to be reused, then don't leave them on the floor. If you leave them on the floor, they'll take them and wash them. And same thing for the bed card. If you put the card on the bed, they will make the bed, and you can reuse the sheets. We've been looking into diversifying our public outreach countywide. There's a water conservation group, Partners for Water Conservation group countywide. We're looking into at least getting a countywide message out there and looking at these different avenues of Facebook and adding some more information on everyone's city's webpage, newspaper, TV ads, and Pandora ads. We do it all together, it ends up being cheaper for everyone. We get the same message across throughout the whole county. And I found that we need to provide more information to our customers on how much water they're using. I get many phone calls. They have no idea how many gallons per day they're using. And that ties into the smart meters of how that could help with it.
We'll be going through that presentation in just a few minutes. And maybe, Damaris, you can talk a little bit why you put Pandora up there, what some other agencies' experience are with Pandora.
Yeah, so Pandora is a streaming radio that a lot of people use now. It's free, and so unless you want to pay, I think, $1.99, then you don't have ads. But otherwise, you have ads that come up every once in a while. And it's very cheap advertisement. City of SLO used it recently for their water symposium that they had, and they just advertised that they were going to be having this. And I think it was $8 to run the ad, and they had over 100 people, and most of the people came because they heard their ad on Pandora. So I think it's a pretty effective way of getting the message out there. And we just want to diversify it a little bit because there's a lot of people who maybe don't watch TV, but they listen to Pandora, or they're not going to read the newspaper, but they use Facebook. So with that, I'll ask if you guys have any questions.
Well, let me first ask if there's anyone in the audience that would like to make a public comment on this topic. Would you state your name? And
Rick Deschler, Morro Bay. I just want to say that, you know, Morro Bay has been sort of in a water conservation mode for 25 years. I remember back in the late 80s when we had our building moratorium and we started replacing all toilets. So Morro Bay, you know, has pretty much gotten the word, especially these last few years. I'm not sure who's paying for some of these proposed rebates. I wasn't quite clear on that. But I think that in the next 2 or 3 months, you're going to see the greatest incentive of all kick into effect is when the new water rates start showing up. And I think we're going to be having significant adjustments to water usage at that time. without adding more, you know, spending more money to do rebates. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, we will close public comment. Any questions? Jan?
I read through all of these, and I think that they made a lot of sense. But now that that was brought up by the public comment, how does this get paid?
The as part of a building permit, we have a WEU water equivalency unit in lieu fee that will fund a portion of the program. And then rates will fund a portion of the program. We budgeted $25,000 for water conservation for this year, and we'll be using that to assist in the funding of the conservation program.
Okay. Thank you. And then I have another comment. You said that you've been, I've noticed all around town where you've been putting up the signs about the brown grass and everything. But as I was walking through Del Mar Park the other morning at about 8 o'clock, there was a lot of puddles on the ground, and I know it was some of it was just from the moisture, the fog overnight. But some of it was not, I mean, it was right along the edge of the grass in the walkway. There was a lot of puddles, and they didn't have a sign up there that they're conserving water. Is there a reason why Del Mar Park seems to be getting watered?
So we decided to cut water off to our ornamental turf areas. So where we have active play on the turf, we've cut water back quite a bit, but we haven't cut it off completely. So we're trying to keep that grass, not kill it completely, because it's very expensive to replace. We do need to replace it. So we need to keep it barely alive. Not to say that we couldn't improve how we have our irrigation. We'll have our parks workers go out there and make sure that we're not getting overspray onto the hardscape. So thank you for those comments. We'll make sure that we inspect that a little bit more often.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.
I'm out at the park every morning with my dog, and I see what you see. And frequently the bowl down there has got water in it, and I've measured it. It's 3 inches deep, and it's out 10 feet, and it's 20 feet wide. But I've talked to Bob out there, who is the maintenance man. That's a difficult area to control, and, of course, that system has been in there for a long time, I would assume. So the water flows down that bowl, goes out there, and then from there it goes out. And that's a difficult thing to handle without killing all the grass, and like our Rob says, if we let it die, it's dead, and then you've got to start over again with the good ornamental grass that kids can play on in the play area. So perhaps that's an excuse, but without spending money on a sprinkling system and doing other things out there, I understand there isn't much we can do about that unless we let it die.
Well, I was going to say, I realized that was part of the issue because it runs downhill. I knew that. But it was just a lot of extra water. And so that's why I brought it up to Bob. Thank you.
Oh, okay. I have a quick question. It's on page 8 of your attachment, too, regarding all the different cities in California and how you break down, how you fall into tiers. And I know there's no logic to this, but I guess what bothers me a great deal, and this happens with Morro Bay a lot, because as I think Rick brought up earlier, we knew about water conservation long before the rest of the state did. We're using 70 gallons per capita per day. We fall into Tier 3. If you go up to McKinleyville, they're using 74, and they fall into Tier 1 and only require a 4% reduction. I guess my question is, it doesn't behoove you to save on water until you're forced to do so by the state, because otherwise, how do you wind up with discrepancies like this? I got a feeling you don't have an answer for it. It's just
There's a provision, and I'm don't have it completely in my head, and maybe we can research it.
There's no logic to it. So
well, actually, I think there is a provision where if a city, McKinleyville is fairly far up there, I think, and they probably have a lot of water right now. So they don't need to reduce as much. There's, I think I'm going to have to get back to the board on this, but I remember seeing the governor's proclamation where they made provisions for those communities that are not water impacted yet are still in the lower water usage, that they are in the 4% range.
Because I saw this in another publication where I think you put out, it was either in the Bay News or the Morro Bay Life or one of these, about these different programs, or maybe it was a card you sent out, I can't remember. And it talks about, let's even do more than what we need to do, the 12% reduction. It almost behooves you not to do that, unfortunately, because the state doesn't take into account, just like you spoke about, you're not going to go back and handle people retroactively if they pulled out their grass 3 months ago. It doesn't behoove you until you hit a point in time where somebody's willing to throw money your way in order to do these things. I don't know why. That rubs me wrong a little bit, in the sense that if you're proactive, you get burned a little bit, and that's how I feel Morro Bay has been, because they have been more water conscious than many of the other cities in the state. And this isn't a question you can't answer. It's just one of those things that kind of grind my jaw a little bit when I look through these things and see what the state is doing. The overall plan for doing these rebates, I think, is a good one. I'm not quite sure about the rain barrel, because it takes rain first to have something fall into your rain barrel, and that's something we're lacking for the last 4 or 5 years. Pulling out the grass, excellent idea. I think it really does drop it off. And overall, I think it's a good way of using the WEU credits you get for in-lieu fees for that purpose. But I had to bring this up because, unfortunately, tonight I may be an adversarial person in the room. There's a few things on here that do concern me greatly on our agenda tonight. And one of them is how the state's allocating what tier we fall into based on the amount of water we use. Because for the general public, 70 gallons per capita per day is a very low number in the state of California.
Thank you, Stephen.
Sorry to get on my soapbox.
Would you like to respond in any way, Rob?
It wasn't a I wasn't looking necessary.
Like
I agree.
Yeah.
If you do the math on the higher users, it's even worse.
Yes.
If you look at the higher end users, they're having to conserve 25 or 30%, yet that doesn't even bring them down even close to where Morro Bay is already.
Yeah, they'll still be over 100 gallons.
Yeah,
per
exactly. Yeah.
Per day.
So yes. Those were my comments to the state during the comment period.
Right. Yeah, no, I wasn't looking for an answer. I'm sorry.
Okay. Chris, any question?
Okay.
Stu.
Yes, Rob. Where do water leaks fall in all this? I see in February we had a jump in consumption, and I remember walking down Ironwood where the 6-inch main popped going up the hill to a nutmeg, and there was water all over. And I noticed there's 3 more little holes out there with covers on them and so on. I imagine inspection holes. If we lost, for example, 8 or 10 units of water or 20 units of water, that's not accountable in, well, this water leaked out.
It actually is accountable, because they're gauging our water use off of production, not off of use. So they're requiring us to report how much water we produce, not how much water we sell. So any losses through the system are penalizing us and demeritizing us.
There, actually, in the reporting, there's a section that we can say that there was some water loss. Like, we had a main water break. We can report that amount of water that we feel it was lost at that time. So we don't necessarily get penalized for that. We can say that we did have a water loss.
Okay, well, that's great. So we know how much water we're generating. We can take and subtract that for how much water we're billing, and the difference is what our loss is. I haven't seen a number on that, but I'd be interested in looking at that. Another issue I'd like to address, the rain barrels. I've got 2 of them, and I've filled them 3 times since it's been raining. I use it to water our garden with, and we grow broccoli and all sorts of things here. and they've been a very good tool for us. And I can say that they really do work. They were purchased from miners, naturally.
And but you already did it, so unfortunately you will not get the rebate.
That's where I was leading for that. So, good idea.
Okay. I wanted to commend the staff. I have been concerned for quite a while now about the lack of reaching out to the commercial establishments to try to get them to conserve. So I really applaud this because I'm very grateful, and I'm hoping that that will really make a difference. My question actually concerns the effectiveness of the existing rebate program. How many people actually take advantage of changing out the toilets?
I think we're pretty close to done with toilet change-outs. I'm not sure that there are many left to retrofit. And maybe Damaris knows about the washing machine rebate, how many folks?
I don't know how many. I didn't look that up before I came, but I know it's very popular. There's always people calling and taking that application.
Okay. Yeah, I was curious because I have done those things but never asked for a rebate, and I assume there's a lot of people like that who simply just do it because it's the right thing to do and not necessarily for the rebate. So I was just wondering how many people actually did take advantage of it. Do you have, the only concern I had in all of the ones that were proposed had to do with taking out the lawn and giving up to $500, which seemed like a lot of money to give to one household to me. I'm just curious if that, where that number came from, if there are other programs out there that are similar or offer a similar amount.
Yeah, I looked at all the county rebates in our area, and this is actually a very low one compared to most of the counties. Some of them do even $2,000 back. To remove the turf, it's not cheap. If you're going to pay someone, landscaper, to do it, it's costly. So $500 doesn't come close to covering that whole cost. But it's some of the other cities do 25 cents. Some are doing $1 a square foot. So it's a little bit all over.
Actually, I was reading an article, I think it was in the L.A. Times, and it might have been down Temple City or that area of the world, and they were doing 2 to 2.5 a square foot. It almost made you wonder if you want to throw sod in and have it removed, because it almost costs more than the cost of greenscaping in the first place. I think 50 cents a square foot is a very fair price, because you will pay more trying to have that removed.
Yeah, and I do want to say I noticed in the written materials that lawns that have gone brown are also not eligible for this rebate. So if you have just ripped out your lawn, it's if you have let your lawn go brown that also you may not. Is that correct? I just want to verify that for the public out there.
It is correct. It's so that we have that reduction now. It's, again, just like it's not retroactive for the same
right.
kind
it's,
of reason.
It's an incentive for people. Mm-hmm. It's not for people who already have done the right thing.
Yes. And it's for people that have turf that is over used by overhead irrigation, too. So if it's not hooked up to an irrigation system, it wouldn't qualify either.
Ah, okay. That's
if
that's
you're hand
important.
Watering, you're most likely watering less than an irrigation controller is. Just,
Okay. Well, we'll bring it back here for discussion. You would like a recommendation from us to pass on to council?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I move that we recommend item C2 on the agenda as noted.
All right. So we pass it on as suggesting
as suggested by staff.
Okay. Okay. Any
I'll
other
second.
Discussion? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Damaris, you could go home now.
Happy anniversary.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, now we will go back to item C1, automated metering and contract customer service. And I'll let you introduce our speakers, Rob.
Actually, I'm going to give a brief presentation first, then we'll bring up our representatives made the proposal to the city, Fathom, and they'll give a brief presentation, open it up to the public, and then questions. As you know, one of council's goals was to look at automated meter reading and contract customer service. So the city prepared a request for proposal, issued that request for proposal, and Fathom did respond to that request for proposal for it's a very long title, Integrated Fixed Network Advanced Metering Infrastructure and Meter Data Management Customer Service System Solution with Utility Billing and Customer Care, or for short, Automatic Meter Reading and Customer Service is the way I view it as. This does not come without a cost, of course. So we will be replacing nearly all of our meters in town, all 5,424 of them. And also the ones that we don't replace, if they're adaptable, we can add the meter reading head to those. But most of our meters need to be replaced. We have a lot of old mechanical meters. We have some mag meters, but they were have been in the ground for a long time. Life of a meter, 10, 15 years before we start losing accuracy on it and we start giving away water. And we get this question a fair amount of time. You know, my water bill's gone up. There must be something wrong with my meter. And these meters are mechanical devices. They don't speed up. They, when they wear, they allow water to leak through without turning the mechanism. So we are probably delivering more water. I won't say probably. We are delivering more water than we're billing for. In addition to the cost factor, this has an additional benefit of the customer being able to get almost instant feedback on the amount of water they're using, and it ties back into our water conservation goals. So Fathom put their bid together. It has a fixed contract price of $3,189,857 and an annual operating cost of $310,470. We would likely finance the fixed costs over 15 years, and it equates approximately to $587,000 per year. The cost savings, we pay for contract metering already, and we do a contract service for preparation of the paper bill. We also do some billing accounting in our own offices, and that comes to about a total of $202,000 a year for that service. Also, the meter replacement, we should be budgeting for meter replacement on an annual basis, not that we would replace meters every year, but approximately $30,000 we should be replacing. The water that's going through the meter that not being billed for, in addition to, there's probably a statistically across the country when meter conversions happen, you pick up a few residences or businesses that aren't on your billing system. They have a meter, the meter is spinning, but somehow it slipped through the gaps and it's not being billed. We anticipate a cost savings in the range of somewhere between $275,000 and $370,000 per year for these. The reason that there's a range is we don't really know how much water is leaking through the meters and not being billed for. And it's kind of a chicken or egg thing. We won't know that exact amount until we can accurately meter that water.
Can I stop and ask a quick question there? Can't you tell between your production versus what you bill out as to how much you're actually losing? Then that may also be in the exfiltration of your pipes in the system, but I mean, you know how much you're actually losing.
Yeah, we've ranged from a low of 3% to a high of 19% water loss.
It varies that much during each month, you mean?
Different years it has varied. Some of it isn't accounted for in basically the level of our tanks. I think that's the big swings in the unaccounted for water.
So okay.
We may, you know, there's a different time schedule between the actual production.
It just seems that you could probably come up with a fairly accurate over time how much you're totally losing from the production side to the actual sales.
On average, it's about 10% water loss.
About 10%.
Water loss, which is relatively low.
I wasn't questioning that. I was thinking somehow when you have that 275 to 370K range that you might be able to have probably a tighter number on what you're truly losing a month.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that we would be able to recover all of that water loss through billing, because I know some of it is
not.
Yeah,
some of it may be exfiltration.
Exactly.
Pipes and
exactly. So the cost implications to the system could be as low as, you know, $15,000 savings to as much as $130,000 per year. Fathom's experience is, I think, towards the latter than the former. They see cities that they've implemented this in recovering much more costs than the expense that they have. And they have as we'll go through their presentation, they have quite a few customer experiences to share with that they can provide. Some of the goals that we looked at for this system was a completely turnkey operation for utility services, focusing on the data, ensure that we account for, you know, all the water, and that the customer could be able to access that data on a more regular basis than once a month. It requires no additional city staff. In fact, we would more likely than not be reducing city staffing, or not going to say that we're going to lay folks off, but they may move to other positions where folks might be retiring from. But that reduces, by reducing staffing, reduces our overall retirement obligation. And if you remember our budget presentations, we have that PERS spike that we have to pay in a few years, so it helps us out with that.
Can I ask you one question again? Under your direct cost savings, it says it's estimated $202K a year. Did that include the city staff's time, or is that purely the contract?
That includes the city staff's time.
Oh, okay.
Also.
So that is whoever you might be moving into.
Exactly.
Another position.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
So it's one full-time person and a portion of two others, and then our contract meter reading service and our contract bill production service. Not to say there won't be city staff needing to still account for the
sewer side.
Sewer billing would be incorporated into this system too. We're not going to send out two bills.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure, to be honest with you, reading this.
I could have clarified that more. Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I did. I knew that in my head, and I should have relayed that to. We've had a few questions from the public regarding if there would be an opt-out provision, and the city is looking towards whether we wanted to provide an opt-out provision. Typically, the cities that have gone to a more automated system, they require a setup fee and a monthly charge to send somebody out there to manually read the meter. can we turn off the service remotely? No, we're not anticipating. I don't think they even have that technology provided with remote turnoffs yet. Maybe one day. Coming. So it's no at this point in time. And then, is it safe? The RF signals that are transmitted from these water meters are orders of magnitude less than this cell phone that I probably shouldn't have in my front pocket. And they're more like a household Wi-Fi router, except that it's only on for data burst a few minutes during the hour or less. And it's also located at least 20 feet from your front door, so you're not standing next to it. So yes, I believe that these are safe. And I think we take far greater risks with RF frequencies, like putting a transmitter next to your head or sleeping under an electric blanket that we do with our lives. So I think this is a very minimal risk, and the risk is far exceeded by the benefit that it provides. The bottom line is we believe that we will receive increased revenue, decreased costs, and better customer service relationships by providing that data on a near real-time basis. At this time, I'm going to turn it over to Fathom so that they can make their presentation. And Jason will come up and present. And they also have Mike and
Nestor
to help with questions as needed.
Great. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Advisory Committee, for allowing us to come and speak to you about what we think is a pretty important thing for not only the state, but really for the United States as we deal with water scarcity. One of Fathom's tenets around putting these programs together has always been that we believe that we're going to be able to solve the demand or the water crisis on the demand side, which goes to conservation and how best we use our water as we go forward. But I wanted to start the conversation just a little bit with your goals, then exactly who we are, why we're different, and really what we see in this utility-to-utility partnership. So our understanding of the city's goals were that we wanted to put in, modernize the water metering infrastructure and the customer information or the utility billing platform, really going to better customer service. And the way we talked about doing that was really ensuring that we could support flexible rate engines, including multi-tiers or other things that may come in the future, things like water-based budgeting and other things that the state is industry is talking about, as well as fully utilize the data that's coming off of the new metering infrastructure, so those hourly reads and being able to get them to their customers, as well as the improved meter reading accuracy and eliminating misreads and costs associated with that, improving the efficiencies of operations. Also, this really goes to improving customer service. One is one element of that is just a fairness to residents to ensure that the costs associated with running the infrastructure are evenly spread around those that are using it. And to do that, we need to measure the water in the best way possible, as well as ensuring that they get the information in as quickly a time as possible. So shorten the loop between the time that you use the water and the time you're informed about using the water. And so that's much of really putting data in the hands of customers, you know, through mobile applications, notifications, things of that nature. We also wanted to modernize the actual infrastructure around the metering and the communication of how we read those meters. We're proposing to read them with radio so you have more granular data on an hourly basis, which gives us both better information, more timely, and I think one of the unique things around Fathom is to ensure we provide that information geospatially so that we can understand when, where, and how we're using the water to help us make better management decisions throughout the industry. So ultimately, the last goal here was to deliver this project quickly, efficiently, and with as little risk to the city as possible. So those were the goals we saw as we put together this proposal for the city. I wanted to talk a little bit about who we were, how we come to be Fathom. We really started in a regulated utility. So my role in that regulated utility was to build the infrastructure for that utility. So we were in a water-scarce region of Phoenix, Arizona, and essentially we're experiencing a housing boom of about 1,000 homes a month. And the mission was to infuse into that utility technology and build scale so that we could realize a water utility that ultimately sold less water to its customers. And in that process, we invested in all kinds of technology, and these are the ones that really made a big difference around customer care billing and the automated meter reading infrastructure. When we were finally finished, we'll never really be finished with that utility, but as the housing boom stopped and the utility started to grow slower, what we found is that that utility was using about 40% less water than its neighboring utilities. It was things like putting in recycled water and distributed treatment infrastructure so that we could return water back to the community. It was also in things around how we use technology to drive power and labor out of the utility. So the power costs in that utility were about 49% less, and the labor costs were about 65% less. And obviously, as we put that platform together, what we found in the sector was that it was quite difficult to put the bundle of all of these pieces together, because as you started to try and build what we call the smart grid for water, you really were talking about a vertical that went from the meter all the way to the customer. And those included water meters, the sensors, the data hosting as that data element increased radically, the analytics to turn it into information, ultimately producing proper and correct bills for all the customers, then customer service, answering phone calls around moving in, moving out, responding to groundwater complaints, whatever may be happening, as well as all the payment systems, giving customers as many ways to pay as possible, and all the outbound and inbound telephony and phone systems that allowed customers to interact with the utility in a better way, ultimately leading to better web tools and mobile applications. And as we looked and tried to build this for ourselves inside of Global Water Resources, what we found is we could only found single providers, and as a result, they needed to be integrated together, and that was costly, and the data wound up in different silos, and it was quite a difficult process that we went through over 5 or 6 years. And as we looked at this, as we were going quickly, we said there's got to be a way that now we've got it right that we can share it with the rest of our municipal friends and bring this particular product to market. And to do that, we had to achieve some scale, and so we started to grow very, very quickly, because as we learned in that process that the only way to adopt technology effectively inside what is our fragmented water sector, right, we're all relatively small, 5,000, 40,000 meters. We don't compare to the Chase Banks and Wells Fargo's or even the electric utilities like PG&E, and so to adopt technology, we had to do it together. And so this, the concept around Fathom was really to bring as many utilities together with this view of what the smart grid for water is, to bring these benefits to cities everywhere. As we've done this, we've seen some amazing results, things like significant increases in revenue. I'll talk a bit to that, but the average increase in revenue for the utilities we're working with is about 9%. We've seen drastic decreases in costs as we were able to bring more and more scale to the program and deploy better and better technology. We've seen reduced consumption around peak demands as people begin to manage the water water better, and that leads to deferring capital costs, which are massive in a value proposition, as you can push large capital projects farther out into the future if you manage your water consumption in different ways, as you're already doing here, things like watering on different days of the week. And then ultimately to customer delight, which were things like helping people use web and mobile tools, and when they did fill out surveys, making sure that the customer service satisfaction ratings were well in the 90% range. And if we did wind up with something less than ideal, that those customers received a call back to ensure we could improve the system. And so we continue to improve the platform. And so the results have been quite amazing. So what we managed to accomplish over our time doing this is we're now on about 150 different public water systems throughout the United States. We're on about 4 million meters throughout the U.S., and we continue to service the largest utilities in the sector, folks like American Water, which has 3.5 million meters, and some of the smallest, smaller utilities in the sector, places like Grass Valley, California, north of Sacramento. And so the idea is bring economies of scale so that we can increase revenue for utilities, decrease costs, and delight customers. As we grew, as we were bringing the sector together, we tried to reach out and ensure that we were bringing all the right players to the party. So we took investments from some of the top private equity firms we could find. One is XPV Capital, which is the leading investment company in water, and Silver Lake Craftworks, which is one of the leading investment companies in software. They did things like Groupon and Dell and organizations like that. We also partnered with the largest of the utilities, places like American Water and Global Water Resources, and lots of partners along the infrastructure side of metering and meter reading so that we could bring better warranties and better service to our particular contracts. So with that, I thought I would talk a little bit about sort of in detail what we're talking about. So the first element in the scope of service is really to roll out the customer information system, which is the utility billing elements of the program, making sure that we're doing everything to produce those bills accurately, mailing them, sending email bills out to customers, providing the paperless options, ensuring that we have a call center that takes all of the calls during working hours and have emergency calls for the ones that come in later. Like, say, those are all based in Phoenix, Arizona, and they're all trained exclusively on water, wastewater, and refuse-type questions. So you'll find a very skilled staff doing that process for us. And then all of the automation around phone and both inbound and outbound calling to notify customers when maybe they've had a late payment or when they've had a leak on their water meter. That leads into the customer portals, which are on all the platforms you would expect, all the web platforms, the iPhone platforms, and the Android platforms, to ensure that we can give this information to customers so that they can pay online, that they can sign up for various alerts, they can compare themselves to neighborhoods to see how they're doing on their water conservation goals. We also focus a lot on ensuring that the data is proper, and we call this a revenue assurance audit, where we go and compare all of the records of the tax partial ID records and the national change of address records from the post office to ensure that every single resident is properly represented in the billing system, which goes to fairness for how everyone should pay for water. We also actually go to each of the homes and photograph the meters so we have records of their installation and when and exactly where they are. The mission is not to go back and check them again for 20 years because they're automated. And then take all of that information which they collect into a data management system that provides the historical information, the reporting, the advanced analytics, and again, all the geospatial information which goes to location, because location is important in water. It's heavy. And so you can make better management decisions throughout the community. And then the infrastructure, obviously changing out the meters that need to be changed out, all of the radios, the registers, and the things that make that process work. We've done this many, many times. We're very comfortable with taking the risk on around these pieces. So we like to say our guarantee is that it will work. And then ultimately leads into the computerized maintenance management system, which we also provide to ensure that your field teams can adequately engage with Fathom on things like turn on meters, turn off meters, respond to billing complaints, or whatever else might happen out in the field as we operate the call centers. This is just a little slide that just demonstrates what we do as we work through with communities, as we continue to go back to the public records and take a look at the audited financials for the cities and compare what happened to the revenue. We normalize it for rate increases that may have occurred. And so, as I said, the average on that is most communities that engage with Fathom in this scope of work are experiencing a revenue increase of 9%. They're also experiencing a water reduction of 9%. Which is a weird thing to say because they're selling less water, but they're making more money. And that really just goes to this piece you were talking about earlier on the non-revenue water. And Fathom's designed to go find where that water is and make sure that every meter and all of the places where you could be losing it from the data side and not the actual water leaking, that we found and we're properly billing for those elements. It creates a large amount of revenue for utilities as everyone's paying their fair share. So just a little bit about us in particular. As we mentioned, we're a utility-based organization. We came out of a utility. We look at these as long-term partnerships. It's also a complete turnkey solution. I like to say the risk associated with getting these systems up and running, we take them all. There's a single person to talk to about it, and that's me. And then it's all cloud-based, which allows us to deploy it and get those economies of scale we talked about so that we can continue to provide the lowest pricing possible to run this piece forward. It also means that you can forget about things like upgrades of software components and maintenance fees surrounded that. All of these costs are included in our fees. And as we continue to improve the platform as a software as a service, you get the benefits of that that improvement as the utilities come together. There's also no IT resources required because it's all in the cloud. All we ask is that you have web tools or basically a laptop and a browser to be able to access the system. And no seat licenses or things like that associated with the software. We want to get the information into the utilities, and so as many folks in the city that would like to use the data, that it's available to them. As we mentioned, there's lots of focus around making sure the data is right. We do that geospatially. We run analytics to quality control and check that information so that as we go forward, we're ensuring that the revenue that's due the community is always is properly collected through the process, and then provide as the best tools we possibly can to manage the systems, things like the electronic work order management systems and the web tools for customers, so that they can engage in on the conservation elements as well. We've also gone to lots of lengths to work with our providers around the meters and the AMI equipment to ensure that the warranties match the length of the equipment. This is one of the things that always would drive me nuts when we would buy equipment, is something would go wrong and then they would say, ship it to me. And I would say, okay, don't send me a box. I'm like, nope, you got to pay for the shipping. And then they'd say my unit's ready and they'd tell me it was on the dock. And I'd have to ship it back and install it. And so we worked very hard to ensure that these warranties around this equipment are actual real warranties. The meter manufacturers pay for the shipping. We get the equipment back. We have cost recoveries in the contracts for things like installations and mass failures. So probably the best warranties in the business is a function of the scale that we talked about. So as I said, our guarantee is that the systems will work. We're the ones who will run them for you over the 15 years. So that's how we feel like we can ensure the risk transfer away from the city and onto Fathom. So hopefully we've demonstrated that we've achieved your goals around the conservation goal elements, as well as the ensuring that it pays for itself. We provide superior customer care, engage the customers, delight them, create more efficient staff, and give you a better understanding of the water system that you're in charge of running. And we feel like we're a very good partner from a utility to utility perspective. We've done this before, and as the demands continue to change, we're here to help. Lastly, I've just got a few pictures of some of the applications just to give you a sense. Things like dashboard elements. This is a picture of basically a comparison of all the water we pumped into a particular area in the community and how much actually got sold. This helps you answer the question of where you should spend your next capital dollar so that you can find the leaking water out of the pipes. We'll do our very best to find the water that's leaking through the data. The geospatial nature, so that teams can run reports around where water's happening, where leaks are occurring, start to see them in locations, which allows folks to make better decisions, all in near real time. As we install the systems, we'll give you dashboards so you can see where our crews are working. As we install meters and we complete those work orders, you'll see them turn from red to green throughout the time, which is great for police, so they know where our teams are. So if you get calls from residents, you can say, well, that was an installation crew. And then really around the web and mobile tools, just a few pictures. There's opportunities to put up your own welcome messages, branded as your particular city, graphics around usage, which are hourly, daily, weekly, monthly, comparing yourselves to your neighbors that are close by. So again, you can see how you're performing. Some other run-throughs of sort of what the graphics might look like. And then ultimately onto the mobile applications, both iPhone and Android, so that, again, we can put the data in the hands of the customers. So that's what I have. I'm happy to take questions. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Should we open public comment first, or do we want to ask?
Unless you have questions right now, and then
okay,
we can open it up.
Okay, why don't we see if we have some questions first then.
Jason, I've read this whole thing, but I just for clarification or for a reminder, how long does it take, do you estimate that it would take to install the system in Morro Bay?
So we take about between 90 and 120 days to turn the billing system on. While we're doing that process, we would install the radio infrastructure, and then it's a matter of putting the meters and radios in the ground. That's probably going to take another 3 to 4 months. So end to end, somewhere between 6 to 8 months.
Okay. And then if there are any of these, if any of them fail, then that's included in your contract to replace them?
Right. So
you
we have
care that all.
As long as they fail via warranty issues, like someone doesn't take a hammer to them.
Okay,
right?
Yeah. Okay.
So we sort of say that we take the risks that we can control in the contract, which are things like warranty failures on the meters and the radios.
And what is the average lifespan of these meters?
So most meters are, this is one of the very good questions, because we haven't typically in the sector had good information about when meters wear out. It's a rotating part. So the more water you put through it is really the issue of how it wears. And so if you have a small home with two people living in it, that meter could last 20 years. If you have a home that's large and irrigation and there's 20 people living in it, that meter could last 2 years. And so what we try and do with the data is watch that particular data, watch when the accuracy drops off so that at that point you can replace the meter and not lose revenue. So it's about the how much you put through the meter, not necessarily how long the meter's been in the ground.
Okay, but then the replacement is included in your contract.
No, if we don't replace the meter if its life has been used up from the standpoint of volume.
So then, what's the average cost of one of these meters?
So the meter, that particular piece of the meter, depending on what broke, if it's just the meter, might be $125, $150, something like that. You might have a better sense of that, Rob.
That's about the right order of magnitude. We've ordered some real cheap meters that we're not real satisfied with for slightly less than that, where the bottoms blow out of them. So that wasn't such a good value. So the meters we're getting right now are in the $100, $120 range per meter.
So these smart meters are about the same cost as the meters we have now?
Yes.
You're saying they're in the same range? Okay. Thank you.
I've got a quick question. Mm-hmm. It talks to the financing over 15 years. Mm-hmm. Are you actually the financier to the city where they're paying? You're installing them, buying the product, and they're leasing it or paying it off over 15 years to Fathom? I guess where I'm driving is the city locked to Fathom for 15 years as a result of this contract?
Yeah, so typically we contract these periods around 15 years. We try and tie it to the...
What I'm driving at, Jason, is if the city 5 years down the road says, gee, we may be paying off the meters for 15 years, can we switch providers of the service itself, are they locked into you for 15 years?
So I just say typically...
Yes.
The cities have asked us to sign long-term contracts so that we can lock down the pricing around all of these pieces. So they want our fees tied directly to the financing, so there's no change in the predictability around what it's going to cost is locked in for 15 years, and we basically have an increase around CPI.
But you're saying that's on the city's choice,
that's typically on the city's choice.
Okay. And, you know, I've dealt with meters where, you know, a van drives around, can pick them up a block at a time. That is not how your meter works. Yours is real time all the time. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, so they pick up hourly reads.
Okay, so it's hourly reads, right. And it picks it up throughout the city. You have little repeaters that are picking it up for each area of town. Is that correct? Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, for example, the gas company recently installed their version of smart metering, and they have a receiver station at the King's Tank, near the King's Tank site, one on Little Morro Creek Road, and then at the very north end of town near our Blanca water tank, so that covers the entire town. We do need some redundancy in signal to make sure that we don't, you know, drop.
But there's more real-time. A van doesn't have to physically go around and pick up a block at a time or whatever the question is.
Okay, thank you.
I guess it might be for Rob. What happens with future meters? Do you guys have to come and install them, or is it something the city handles from that point on?
The way I understand it, it can work a few different ways. We can work with your contractors to install meters, or our crews can install meters.
Yep, absolutely. So the fees are separate between the billing services and the financing around the meter installation elements. So if you added 10 new homes to the community, the cost would go up by the 10 new homes for the billing services, but then the meters could be installed by the developer perhaps, or by the city, or if you need the help, we're always happy to do it.
And then I guess, Rob, do you have an idea of, like, as we're going down this, if everything went through, how far down the road would something like this happen? Just thinking in mind of, there's that missing water that people's bills are already going up, obviously. And then there's the water they hadn't been paying for, that it's going to be, obviously, it's the fair share needs to be paid for, but it's all might come at the same time, or?
Potentially. So we would be looking to move this on to City Council in August, and then shortly after that execute a contract, and then we're talking somewhere in the order of, you know, 6 months to get it implemented. So somewhere in the next, you know, within this next fiscal year, we would be looking to implement and be completely online if it happens, when it happens.
And part of, just to add to that, part of most of the revenue that we find is actually associated with things like mistakes in the billing system. So perhaps the customer was supposed to be paying for 50 units of water, but they're only paying for 5 because the multiplier in the billing system's wrong. Those are the things that we tend to find. So we haven't experienced a big pushback from that sort of revenue because it's the fair share argument, as you mentioned.
Stu.
Okay. The numbers on it don't seem to add to me. And if we pay you $580 per connection, which is what that $3 million equates to, that's a one-time charge and gets everybody water meters, and we're off and running. There's a yearly fee on top of that, isn't there?
Yeah, but the yearly fee on top of that is to provide customer service. So we have a call center to send out all the bills, all the paper, the postage, the bank fees, the software, all of those elements. That's what the recurring fee is for.
And so we don't know exactly what that fee is to tell our customers. That's billed to them separately?
No, that's included in the fee to the city, and it's roughly $310,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. It's
in the staff report and in the scope, yeah.
Okay. So that was one of the questions. It appears if those meters are $125 and we're charging roughly $580 a connection, those meters include the RF transmitter.
Absolutely.
So it's not a separate unit that's on the side. So if we had to buy another one, they include RF transmitters if one went bad.
No, so, well, the costs of that particular element are all of the software elements, all of the auditing process around getting the projects installed, the actual brass meters, the registers, the radios, all the RF network, all the project management costs, all the engineering associated with that, and then all the systems integration elements around the software. So, yes, that's the math. If you take, you know, the lump sum charge and divide it by the number of meters, but there's a lot more included in that number than just meters. Is that the question?
That was my question. Is what's the difference there? We're going to the receivers for the RF. That's going to be done through what network?
So there's a couple of different options. We'll work with Rob on that to basically pick the vendor specifically. So we've got a few. The thing that I always look for is to ensure that we use a low-frequency provider, something below 900 megahertz, as that has been proven to be very, very effective in the water space.
So that's in the cell phone type of range, or off one of those towers is what you've been using?
No, it's much, much lower. It's basically a very low bandwidth. It's a low bandwidth, long wavelength. So there's not as much data that transmits, but it goes a longer distance. It goes through the pits and comes out of the ground in a better way.
Okay.
I'm not sure what a cell phone frequency is, but it's much, much higher.
Yeah. What I'm concerned with, of course, is it going to support the addition of, 5,400 more signals, or do you stagger the signals out so they don't go all out at once?
Yeah, so the signals come out at different times. These particular systems have been deployed at very, very large communities. We've done very large ones as well. So we'll take the risk around that particular element. We'll make sure you get all the reads. That's in our contract.
We'll know that whatever we use will support it before we get into this.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And sign it. There will be a commitment from your company that says, yes, we can support it. If we can't, or if there's a blip in this thing or whatever happens, it's not Morro Bay's responsibility.
It's on us.
It's ours.
Absolutely.
That sounds good. Is the data in the system ours or yours, or can we download it? What happens? It's software as a service.
Software as a service, the data is always yours. So that data, to the extent you need to access it through a different portal, we can figure out how to get that to you. It's also fully represented in the software as a service. But, I run utilities. My position on all this is that it's the utilities data, and so we're just stewards of it.
I spent some time with a software company in St. Louis, and occasionally the servers would go down. And, of course, the phones would light up.
Uh-huh.
The minute that happened, because they use software as a service. And with 20,000 users, that's a big issue, especially when it's running their business. You have experience for how many years doing this on that platform?
So the platform's been running since 2006 through Global Water Resources, and then as it expanded to other utilities. Today it's on about 4 million meters. So it's a very robust software platform. We sign specific service level agreements to ensure that kind of thing doesn't happen.
Now, you'll be billing the customers.
Mm-hmm.
For us. The payments will come to us or come to you through a credit card or a debit card, or how does the billing work?
Sure. So the billing comes back to the automated lockboxes, and so they run through that lockbox account. At that point, we match them up to all of the customers that paid, and on a daily basis we'll remit those funds to you with the journal entry to load into your financial system.
Okay, and that, in, of course, what account and the rest of that needs to be worked out with the city.
Mm-hmm.
If a customer, you said the customer will be able to run reports on their water use and what's happened over a period and so on. Are there an adequate number of reports available for customers? Where do you have, you've got that worked out, I would imagine.
Yeah, so most of those are around the financials that the customer experiences, like when did I pay my last bill, how many bills have I paid, what were the amounts, the ability to see 24 months worth of their old bills, as well as their consumption. So those are the sorts of reports we provide. We haven't had any asks for additional things from customers. Most of the asks are from utilities asking for, some other report they might want to see.
And I would imagine the city would have different types of reports that we can run. These are SQL reports off the server somewhere, aren't they?
Yeah, so they're not SQL reports, but they're big, yes, they're reports. And so
they're
you can
reports.
Run them. We also have a package that we call our standard reporting package that basically is all the standard reports that municipalities need, things like top 10 users and things for their audit that come out monthly that are just emailed to whoever you designate.
So if we do ultimately move to your system, we've got current users on the old system that we've been putting our own meters in with and billing and so on. Are you planning to migrate the data from the current system to yours? So if a customer says, wait a minute, that bill before was $60 a month, now you're charging me $150, it's this darn new network.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
This is a great question. So what we do in the transition is what we found through deploying these systems before is that it's best to go recreate the data from scratch around where the meters are and customers at the location, because you get better data from that perspective. So we go through a process that collects all the meter data, collects the customer records data, then we compare it to your existing billing system and match up all the results, and then we work with the city to ensure that we've got the right information in our particular system. Now, what we don't do is pull in, say, 2 years worth of financial line item AR billing. What we do pull in is 2 years of all their consumption history so that they can see it. And then we'll store that particular system's database on our servers so that if a customer does call and needs that particular help, we'll go research that particular element in that system to find the information, because the costs of that are drastically less than trying to convert all that information for the what-if scenario. We've been doing that on every single city. I can't think of one time I've had to go back to that data so far, so that's why we do it that way.
Good. So you pick it out in 100 cubic feet?
Yep.
Okay. That's fine. Is most of the residents are three-quarter inch service, I would assume, for the meters. What happens if you've got customers that have been using one inch or commercial users and so on? I imagine there's different sizes of meters.
Yep, different sizes of meters. So we'll verify all those meters through the what we call the field audit process to make sure we've got all the right ones. And then we put that in our proposal as what we understand the meter population to be right now.
And we gave, for the in the RFP for the bid process, we gave a meter count of what size meters that we have so that they could prepare their cost proposal based on that meter count.
Excellent. You've been here before. Okay. That's good. The billing that you're going to be sending out to the customer, that's going to be accessed online, and they're going to give you an email address, or what, are you mailing it, or what's happening, or do they have an option?
Yeah, so they have an option. They can get the bills via post, so we'll mail bills to all the customers. The customers that don't want to receive that that paper bill can sign up for what we call e-billing, in which case we'll email them the bill. And then they can set up their, if they'd like, they can set up a bunch of recurring paying options. So they can get an e-bill, and then we'll debit their credit card or their bank account directly on the day they specify.
So if their billing is more or less at one period of the year, you can do what PG&E does, and you can average the bill out.
So we don't, technically today we don't average the bill. That's on the software roadmap. But today we just, it's whatever it is in that month, and we can debit that particular account.
Can we include a message from the city?
Yep.
On your billing? Great.
So, and there's a little area on the bill print where you can put a particular message, and we've included the ability to change that on some regular basis.
I would imagine the city will deal with you on what the rate for financing is, should we choose you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not an issue with me on that. I think we'll be communicating, or you'll be communicating with the customer on what we're doing with this. We're already getting some heat on it. Because when I walk around town and talk to people, you know, why are we doing this? Well, there's some very good reasons why we're doing this. Mm-hmm. Water consumption is one big one, and conservation. So I commend you for your research. Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all.
Okay, thank you. I just have a couple questions for you, and then I have some for Rob. Can you describe for me what this data transmission looks like, the transmitters that are going to be around town picking up the signals?
Yeah, the best description is probably they look like a traffic box with a solar panel on them. So a box that's maybe like the size of that black thing in front of me that would be hanging on a light post or a post or sitting on top of a city building or a water tank, and then there'll be a solar panel that's about yay by yay, and that's the data collector that we need to locate through the city. There's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 of those.
3 to 6 across the entire city?
Across the entire city. And then the radios are obviously in with the meter in the pits in front of the homes.
Okay. And how will the citizens be able to access their own data on consumption?
They just log into the web portals, and they can see that information on the web, or we can actually do that as well on the iPhone or Android applications.
Okay, thanks. My question's for Rob. Do you know of other cities in our area that have moved to this similar kind of a system?
The city of Pismo Beach is exploring through a different financing mechanism, and different level of service, but automatic meter reading. And the city of Santa Maria did. Other cities in California, I know Grass Valley is a small city that has used this method, and we've reached out to them to make sure that they're satisfied with that service.
Okay. And I know that we have also had a presentation previously on this topic. I'm just wondering how the RFP process went. Were there multiple people bidding on this, or...
Global Fathom was the only proposer for this whole turnkey operation. Okay. I did get inquiries from a couple of companies asking me to revise the RFP to split it up into segments so that they could propose on different pieces of it. And at this time, we were looking for a complete turnkey operation and to reduce basically city staff time in... We're not radio techs. We don't have radio techs here to run a system like that. So we weren't looking to get into the radio business. And we are looking to actually reduce our involvement staff-wise in billing services. So we really wanted the full gamut, and Fathom really was the only proposer that could provide that complete service.
Okay. And my understanding, just from reading David Buckingham's column in the Bay News, is that there will be no rate increase to cover this. So I'm assuming that the rate increase that we just passed includes the cost for this. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, and we're looking to achieve the revenue savings through billing water appropriately, as... Jason has discussed with us. So that's really the benefit of this, is to make sure that we're billing appropriately for our water use.
Right, because I did notice in the proposal there is a $4 and some cent fee basically per residence per month for this service. Is that correct?
That's an estimate of what
it would cost.
We're not proposing to add that on to the bills.
Okay. No, I know.
That's just to get us a level of...
I just wanted to clarify for the public where the money is
coming
from.
There's no rate increase proposed with this. And ideally, after operation, there could be a delay of rate increases. I might be a little Pollyanna, but...
So we can expect rates to go down once we get these cost savings.
I didn't say that. There's a possibility based on achieving what typically happens in other cities where this is implemented.
I think it's important for the public to know that the water utility doesn't exist to make a profit, and so that it's just covering costs. I think that's
yes.
Really
I think Mr.
Point.
Buckingham's article said we might turn a small profit. That wouldn't be the goal of the water utility. It
right.
would be to not have rate increases rather than turning a profit.
Thank you. Thanks. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
I've got one more question.
Sorry.
Is the software written with range triggers in it? So once you establish what the range is of use of a particular customer, and it jumps way out, like I had a hose blow off of a back line and probably dumped one or two CCF out the street. My neighbor called me.
Yep.
Is that something you can catch?
Yeah, that's something you actually would sign up for on the web portal. You would check a box that says notify me of a high consumption or leak alert, and at which point when we detected that in the system, we would send you an email or a text message.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. All right, we'll open it up for public comment. Anyone in the audience who would like to speak to this issue?
Sure, why not? Rick Deschler, Morro Bay. Good evening, board and members of staff. I hope that you have all read my email that I sent on Tuesday. I'll try not to repeat myself tonight. I don't believe that this proposal by Global Fathom is good for the citizens of Morro Bay, spending $3 million plus up front and $50,000 to $300,000 a year is not going to save us anything, not in lost water revenues, billing labor costs, or defective meter replacements.
Those are purely speculations at this point. You should have a staff report that gives you the costs of previous years, current costs, and projected costs if we keep using our present meters. How are you expected or able to make an intelligent and informed decision with just a flowery proposal lacking anything for comparison? If you don't know what the costs are today, how can you tell this is a good deal for tomorrow? And there was, you know, sort of a pitiful justification in the paperwork, you know, was used saying, we process 4,000 checks per month by hand, but with the new system, there's going to be an app. I don't know. We have had payment options available for years. I use AutoPay for mine. People are still going to be paying by check at City Hall because they want to. That is still going to be an option in the current contract, or in the proposed contract. So how is this really going to change anything? The only difference is that now, when they pay by check at City Hall, Global Fathom will be getting a cut of the check, cut of the payment. They say the city will not only save money, might even come out ahead. Yeah, right. Have them show you hard figures before you believe that line. You need to be making your evaluation and recommendation based on solid comparisons, not a flowery proposal. Don't let this be bulldozed through. This does not need to be forwarded to the City Council today without you getting all of the relevant facts. When I sit down, I won't be able to get up and ask other questions or speak. So it is up to you to ask the hard questions, demand complete and comprehensive answers. Don't be a rubber stamp on this proposal. Be a devil's advocate for the citizens of Morro Bay. This is a very, very big proposal. I realize a lot of the data that the city will be collecting, you know, is valuable to the Public Works Department. But, you know, please make sure that you have all the solid figures in front of you. It didn't seem like you had figures. You're just being, numbers being pulled out now and then. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any more questions based on what we've heard? Okay, close public comment. All right, discussion, bring it back. You don't have any?
Yeah, I'd like to, and I have a few questions for Rob. I thought we were just talking to the vendor. First of all, I have no issue or problem with Global Fathom. I understand what they're doing. I understand their costs, and that's all fine and good. I do have some concerns because what I'm hearing, and I want to make sure I understand the fiscal impact correct before I go on. I told you I might not be the most popular guy in the room tonight based on some of the things on the agenda. The first is you're basically looking at a cost between the fixed cost of putting in the system and the contract billing of about $587,000 a year. We'll use $600K. Is that correct?
That would be the annualized.
That would be going forward. What we spend right now is $200K plus $30K for replacement meters. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So basically, we're looking at, $300,000, $370,000 difference. That's the best you're going to get in your scenario of what you're going to be able to collect from people. So basically what's happening is you're going to collect more people from more money from the ratepayers of Morro Bay for a net effect of zero to the city in the water fund at the end of the day. Am I missing something?
I think that's about right. I
guess what bothers me a little about that is, gee, I'd rather almost give the people the free water they may be skating by on these things rather than money that's leaving the community. You talk about an employee that they may get moved over to another job. I don't know why that this. I could appreciate it if that money was coming back to the city in some form or function. I voted for the water rate increase. I voted for the sewer rate. I am a person that's pro-infrastructure. I really am. I think this is a very good system, don't get me wrong. And it's not against Global Fathom or any other vendor who would be coming in mm-hmm. providing this service. It's just the numbers don't make sense to me right now. And I hate to say I only got this yesterday because Tuesday I was busy and forgot to grab it when I was over at the city. But it was a short notice kind of thing. I'm reading through it quickly. I'm not ready to say I would commit recommending this to the city council at this point in time, because all I see is the ratepayers paying more and no net effect to the city other than one person maybe losing their jobs as a result of it. And that's my question. I just want to make sure I understood the numbers correctly, and it sounds like I do. Is that correct?
I in general, I believe so. I think Fathom's experience shows a little bit more rate recovery than I.
You're showing.
I did a lower estimate than what they showed. I think it's a matter of billing water appropriately. There is water that is going perhaps through the meter or that is misaccounted for,
right,
that people aren't paying for.
I'd agree with you, Rob. I replaced my meter. I called you guys up to replace a meter about 6 months ago because you always grant 3 units, and I always use 3 or less, and so my bill never changed. All of a sudden, I noticed the meter reading never moved over about 4 months, and I still got the bill, and it didn't click in until I looked at the readings. And I'm sure there's a lot of meters out there that are probably registering close to zero, and a lot of reasons why is half the people in this town live in, you know, in the Central Valley, and they're not using water all the time. So I can't appreciate that. I think meters can be very inaccurate. It just concerns me a great deal when I see a lot of the ratepayers are going to go through basically a doubling of fee, and now we're looking at something that's going to, yes, it's going to collect more money from people that may not be paying now. However, at the end of the day, it doesn't help the city in the sense of more money towards the water fund. And I think that's the part that concerns me. I'll jump off again.
Yes, go ahead.
I'm glad he brought that up. I was, because I had some questions about that too. So I even made a chart about current costs and what Fathom was going to be. And on your fiscal impact, you say that it's you'll be saving $202,000 a year. The direct cost savings include meter reading, billing, and customer services savings of $202,000.
Correct.
And that the city currently budgets at least $30,000 a year for water replacement revenue.
Water meter replacement.
And we won't be doing that. So that's $232,000 approximately. And then you go down to the indirect costs are estimated to range from $275,000 to $370,000. What exactly are the indirect costs? Is that what we're losing in money we're not collecting?
Correct.
So if we add all those up, then we come pretty close to this $587,000
yes.
a year. Okay, that's all. Thank you. Go ahead.
Rob, on the $30,000 budgeted yearly for changing out old meters, do you have an idea of how many meters we actually do change out yearly for replacement purposes?
It varies from year to year, no, I don't have that number.
Does that tend to be a surplus number, or we tend to hit that 30,000?
We come pretty close to that number.
Does that labor included? If it was $100 a meter and you had 5,400 connections in the city, that's not hard to figure out how much labor is involved above that to get those meters in there. If we changed them all at once.
That budget number does not include our staffing. That's only to buy the basically to buy the brass.
Okay.
Any other comments? We're discussing it now to make a recommendation. I happen to share some of Stephen's concerns, and they're concerns that I had when we heard the first presentation on this topic, and I think it really has to be justified in terms of, for the citizens, what money we're saving. And here what we're really asking is for them to pay more money. Now, granted, you'd like a system that's fair, so if we could somehow identify those people or the meters that aren't functioning properly, that to me seems like a better strategy to accomplish the same goal than to install new meters in all of the households. But it seems to me you could possibly, with some research, do that.
Yes, and I just want to point out there's other than monetary reasons that we're looking into this. One is giving folks, we're asked a lot how much water they actually use on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. We read meters once a month. We could not tell you how much water you used yesterday. We can tell you on average how much water you used over the entire month. Mm-hmm. And we do need to meet water conservation goals, and this is a strategy to use. So,
can I ask a quick question to Rob? Is there any rush in taking this to city council that this can't be continued? I guess that would be my question. I got this yesterday. I hate to say I probably didn't get to study as much as I, but just on the financial side of it, I do have concerns. I think it's a great system. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem with what Global Fathom is suggesting in the product they serve. It does concern me a little that you have only one, so to speak, proposal or bid on this particular item, because it's not a low-cost item. I mean, we're talking something of a great cost, and I don't know apples to oranges, but what I see is you're going from a system that costs about $200,000 a year to a system that you're going to be paying $600,000. Yes, you do get those new meters, and I will agree with that aspect of it. But at the end of the day, I feel like I said, what goes to the water fund is almost a net effect of zero, is what I'm seeing based on this system. I think you're. Did you wish to speak again? Do you wish to open it up?
So just I think the cost proposal, as we talked about it, was, as Rob said, was conservatively assembled, not to make any overpromises. I do think that it's also worth taking a look at the difference between the cost savings or proposal we're taking on the $200,000 compared to our costs for turning on, or the recurring elements around turning on, the automated billing processes and the web applications and all those pieces, and separating those from the discussion around the meters. Because as you look at the metering costs, $30,000 a year in invested in the metering infrastructure is insufficient to replace your meters every 20 or 30 years. And so those are some of the apples to apples. What we're really, I think we're sort of saying that there's an increased fee in the execution of the operational elements within Fathom, but we're sure to recover that in additional revenue and some of the other cost justifications that weren't put in the particular memo that you mentioned earlier. And then maybe look at the metering infrastructure side of it as well. On, you do have very, very old meters, and they're very old from a function of, you know, they need to be invested in. And so I would just caution you to separate those two things.
If I could ask it, basically, I could appreciate probably even the $3 million side of it in the fixed cost of putting him in, but right now he's paying $200,000 for somebody to go around and read meters individually and people to hand put out bills. You're sitting there getting this all electronically and charging, it looks like, $310,000 a year for that purpose. Now, I realize you got to pay for your cost of setting up your organization and all that, but at the end of the day, I would think your system would be a lot more efficient on the reading side than people who are going have to go street to street and read meters individually. And I guess Like I said, I have nothing against what you've come in and you've proposed. It's just I look at it from the city standpoint that all I see is ratepayers paying even more money. The ones that are maybe getting a little bit of a free ride, and it's not their own fault. It's through the fault of the meter itself. But then there's no net effect benefit I'm seeing for the city itself. And that's the part, financially, I should say. Maybe it's less headaches. You don't have to deal with certain aspects of it. But that's the problem that's niggling at me right now. And I'm not adverse to this system. I just haven't heard enough to say I'd be willing to recommend this system. I guess that's where I'm at.
As you consider it, I would ask you to look at the service level improvements for the community.
Yeah.
It goes to things like web and mobile applications that aren't there today that can be there in short period of time. It's a customer call center that'll answer the phones in 60 seconds or less. It's IVR systems to facilitate 24/7 service levels. It's all of these pieces that it takes to basically give customers what they're beginning to expect as a function of the other service providers that they interact with. Right, we never compare each other to other water utilities. We need to begin to compare ourselves to other service providers. Mm-hmm. And when you look at those elements and what other service providers have to bring to the table to keep customers happy, this is a way to do it in an extremely inexpensive way that I think does add incredible service levels for the community. And so to look at it just on a cost basis without also looking at it as the service level improvements for the community, I think is something that is worthy of consideration.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thanks.
I tend to agree with, I don't have enough information to make a decision on this right now. I think part of the elements we've heard here are very good, and you know, our drive is to conserve water. We are our most precious resource, and we don't want to be a Cambria, no doubt. But what do we do with that? And I think that perhaps in another month, if we could get scheduled again, if we come back with more information on some of the other things we discussed here, you know, why weren't there other bids? Maybe the RFP didn't go out. Maybe somebody needs a phone. I don't know what that was. And so we can sit down and take a look very close at what's happening.
I don't think Rob's going to be able to get other bids. I think he stated the fact that people wanted to come in and piecemeal different aspects of it. And like I said, I can appreciate it, and I have no problem with the, you know, Global Fathoms bid. I just like to see if more money is going to be spent.
Would you be able to put together a bit more information? At least if it goes to council, we could make that recommendation.
We could continue this meeting and still meet my direction to bring this forward. We probably would have to do a special meeting in July to accomplish that. And I can poll the entire board, probably send out something tomorrow. To pick that date. I know we can't do the third. We would bump up against Rec and Parks Commission if we tried to do the third Thursday in July. But I'll check.
Just not the second Wednesday.
Okay. You have to be someplace else. What I can do is check room availability and then send out a series of suggested dates, maybe use my new favorite tool, Doodle Poll, to you guys, and we could fill it in and see when we're all available to meet in July and still be able to get you the information and proceed forward to council in August.
Can I go ahead and make a motion to move to continue this item to a special meeting? Oh.
Yeah, I think we need to give Rob some direction on what more information
yes,
we need from him before
I
we
would
do
appreciate that.
Yes.
I have one more question, too, or one more observation. In walking around as I do, my dog drinks out of the gutter a lot in the morning, water that's running out of people's backyards. I would wonder how much water is getting out that way and going down the storm drains. And imagine we could query some system someplace and tell that, like last month, we used 5 units. And we've cut that from 8. And so these people that are using 9 or 10 or 11, do they know it? Or do they, you know, how do we identify them? And if we could cut those down or talk to those people, what's going on? Maybe that would conserve some water for us too, and lower our consumption. I don't know, but I think that should be part of the equation in identifying. And we don't want to be an anonymous. Address on the website.
Yeah, let's give Rob some direction on what more information we need from him, so that and you have a motion on the table to continue.
Oh.
Is there a second to that motion to continue this discussion until the next meeting? We'll have a special meeting in July.
I'll go ahead and remove my motion so you can go ahead and questions can be answered.
You could have done it either way.
Right.
You could have made the motion and then had a discussion of the motion and give me direction during that time.
Okay.
Is there a second to to Stephen's motion? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Now we'll discuss what we're going to have Rob bring us in July. So.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I understand. I appreciate that we're trying to move into the new times with the meter, the smart meters and stuff. And I understand how it's going to find water that's all the advantages where you can find water that's leaking, you can find water that's currently not being paid for. I would like to see, just have something to compare the existing costs of the water rate system, with the billing and the collecting now, compared to this cost.
So a breakout, is that correct, of the current costs versus the costs in the proposal?
Got it.
And also, Rob, just some information to help understand if we were to actually go through and try to replace all 5,500 meters.
What would be our cost?
Yeah, because I guess it would only last us maybe 20 years if we were lucky. Because I'm just trying to do the math in my head, because I know when we purchase a meter, it's something around $1,600, $1,800 when we're swapping them out. But you're mentioning the $125 and then maybe a couple hours of labor, so I'm just trying to figure out what the actual cost would be.
So when we pay for a meter install, it's also for the service that comes over through the main, tapping of the main,
okay.
So there's much more involved, setting of the box.
Yeah.
The replacement of the meter is basically the brass mechanical meter, so it's quite a bit less than what we charge through development for the full installation of a water service.
Okay. So, yeah, just something, I guess you're projecting those would last approximately 20 years, is that the idea, or would it be a lot less than that?
Well, it's like Jason has said, it's generally, somewhere at most 20 years, but it's dependent on how much water flow. It's a mechanical device. It's a rotating mechanical device, and they wear out.
Yeah.
So the more water that flows through one, the less they last. So on average, probably 15 years might be a good number, since that's typically the warranty period. So
maybe a projection like that, and then also, because I know with a lot of projects we're bumping up to 1-inch meters for fire sprinkler purposes.
Right.
So if there'd be any, what the cost difference would be if we went that approach to just do them all at 1-inch at this point.
Okay.
Stu?
And Rob, I'd like to run a query and find out who the regular residents are that are using substantially more than the average water load, and somehow work out a system where we can communicate with them and see why. Possibly these people don't even recognize it, but they're doing that. And what can we do to help them? And if we cut those people, maybe it's 10% of the people, and we've cut their consumption by 50%, is that this number? I don't know, but I'd like to take a look at that.
Okay. We might have an issue with publicly shaming folks about their water use. We may be able to generically give that to you. I'm not ready to, without speaking with the city attorney, to publish a list of names and bring it to
the... Well, I'm not advocating a list of names. People are watching, going to watch this in the next few days, too. So we need to identify that. And I do see it running down the gutters, and other people do, too. And, you know, the question is, who are they? Are they large consumers that are in a residence because one reason or another and just aren't aware of it?
Okay.
To save you some time from coming back, one question I do have. The total billing in a year for the water, you know, everybody's water, do you have a number? Is it like $3 or $4 million? Do you know offhand how much you actually collect in revenue in a year on average?
Somewhere around four, well, with the new rates.
Well, that might be different.
A little over $4 million
okay,
a year.
A little over $4 million. So this $370K was, you assume 10% recovery because that's what you're losing.
Right.
Okay. Don't need to come back with it.
Okay. Okay. Something less than 10%.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay, gotcha.
And I'd like to add, I think you said you could tell us approximately how many meters have been replaced in, let's say, the last 10 years, so we would know how, or I don't know if you have those numbers.
Yes, we can, as long as we don't have to go back further than 10 years.
Well, just to get an idea of how many meters really aren't necessary to be replaced, per se.
Yeah.
But what the rest we can assume are older and would need replacement at some...
Anyway.
Yes, correct. And then just the number of people that pay in person, because you're still going to have to do that, I assume. Anything else?
Just have a question related to what Stuart was saying. When you want to know, so you said some people don't know how much water they're using. They may not be aware of what they're using. And isn't this sort of one of the reasons why we're considering going into the smart meters, so that you would know what you're using and how much?
That's the argument for the other side. That's right.
That's
right. So, you know, but I think if we take a look at that and say, okay, if we can reduce that amount, if we can somehow figure that out and say what's the percentage of those people that are using above the normal CCF, and if we made them aware and they did cut back, where would we be?
And Rob, could you maybe include in that is a list of water meter sizes that were proposed with their package? As far as the sizes of water meters, you mentioned you had given them a kind of account of our different sizes.
Yes.
Okay.
I can see I should have included the request for proposal as an attachment to my staff report, because it's all this, a lot of this information is there.
One quick question also, Rob. They're going to physically be sending the bill either by email or by postal or however. Are they going to include the sewer fee on that bill for you? Is that the plan?
That was the plan.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. Thank you.
And I just wanted to clarify one last point. This is something that the City Council has already looked at. Is that correct? And has basically set as a goal to eventually...
Make a decision.
To reach a decision, or is it to explore the feasibility of doing this? I just need to clarify what the council's directive was.
The goal is to explore this idea and to make a decision to either do this or not do this.
Okay.
Yeah, I noticed your recommendation did not say for approval. It was vague in that aspect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. So we'll be back in July.
Yes.
On this issue.
Sorry to bring you all guys back.
Okay. One more, Stuart.
I read that a lot of new construction is dual plumbing, where they use gray water, and then they recycle that. There's a whole bunch of rules and regulations on that kind of a thing, and I wonder how many of this gentleman's success stories are using dual wastewater. Where gray water goes one direction and the black water goes the other direction, they recycle the gray water. Of course, that would lower your cost of water. So
yes, if you did that on site, yeah.
Yeah.
We haven't seen really many gray water systems proposed with new residential construction in Morro Bay. Now, with the new building code coming up next year, we may, the new green building code, we may see something.
It's in there.
What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see a little more addition of that.
Okay, thank you. We're going to move on to item C3. This is excuse me. Do you
take just a 5-minute break,
sure,
if you wouldn't
let's
mind?
Let's do that.
Okay,
I like
thank
that
you.
Idea. Okay, we're back, back in session, and we're considering item C3. Do we want to form public works subcommittees? Are we going to hear from you first, Rob?
Formation of subcommittees came up as a genesis of an idea based on our Water Reclamation Facility Citizens Advisory Committee. So that committee formed 3 subcommittees to discuss in depth, outside of the regular meeting schedule, issues, and then they bring those back to the meeting. So they formed a engineering, environmental, and finance subcommittee. So it has been, especially the finance subcommittee, I think has been provided quite a bit of benefit to staff and the public in exploring different options and then bringing those back to discuss. So we keep a regular agenda item on there for the subcommittees to report. Sometimes they meet and they discuss and they report out what they discussed. Sometimes they don't. And the way I see this happening is if it is the desire of the board to form various subcommittees, that you could meet on your own, we could set up appointment with staff, research specific topics, bring those back to the full board. Full board has a lot of interest in it. Then we would develop staff reports and go from there. So some of the subcommittees that talked about, what do you know, water is the first one, maybe including water conservation, a wastewater subcommittee, streets and sidewalks, franchise subcommittee, really currently garbage is really our only franchise that we deal with. Traffic and transportation might be a subcommittee, transit, and capital projects. Those are the ones that I came up with that might be of benefit to this board and the community. And I'll turn it back to the board for your discussion and see if you desire to do that, or perhaps this is something that we might want to discuss again when there's the 2 other members here, or you could form a subcommittee or not tonight.
Okay, thank you.
Thank
Rob.
You.
Thank you.
Can I say something real quick?
Sure.
I do sit on the Roof CAC, and there are the 3 committees, and quite frankly, I'm on the engineering one and haven't had to report anything to date. So it's not something that you have to come to the meeting every time and have something, but if you see something on this list that may be near and dear to your heart, you're bringing up about water or things of that nature tonight, Stuart, maybe that would be your area of interest of these different things. You may wish to sit on a subcommittee, or if streets and sidewalks is your cup of tea, you kind of pick the ones that, and then you have the ability to go through, and like he says, they'll make themselves available if you need information from the city, and then you report back to the rest of the committee at a meeting of what you may have came up with as it relates to it. I just wanted to preface that out a little bit because I've seen it in action. It does work. He's right. The Finance Committee, because in the early stages of this, we haven't seen any engineering design yet, and that's why we really haven't made any reports per se yet. But it gives you an idea of some of the things. I wasn't sure about wastewater since you already have your own particular roof cack committee. You know, it'd be probably a little bit redundant. And seeing Janine in the audience, transit and the trolley work so well that I can't really fault anything there. But the other ones, you know, if you do see something on there that you're interested in.
I think one of the questions you're receiving is this Brown Act thing. The way I read it, three of us could be on that.
That's correct.
It's considered an ad hoc.
That's basically what you're doing.
Could people from the general public be on there too?
Generally speaking, it hasn't been.
No, it's just a subcommittee of this board. That wouldn't prevent you from meeting with. It's not a notice meeting. So if you wanted to invite other folks to meet there, it wouldn't be a Brown Act violation.
Good.
So they wouldn't be official subcommittee members, but there would be nothing to prevent you from including other folks in your ad hoc meetings.
Sure, and we could meet at our house, at Carla's, or wherever.
Correct.
And talk about it and not be in violation of Brown Act. Somebody says, well, there's three of you there.
Well, you wouldn't be in violation of three.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
So the only Brown Act concern with subcommittees is if, say, you serve on more than one subcommittee, you can't relay the information from one subcommittee to another subcommittee.
All right. How do we feel about it? I'm in favor of it. I think it's a great idea. I think it will make us better educated and more informed when we come to our meetings, and especially since we only hold them every other month. I think we will gather much more information if we do it this way.
I totally agree, and I think it's a way to really engage in the process and perhaps get more interest in the Public Works Advisory Board, too.
Right. Okay.
It would be nice if the other two were here at the time, but if you want to form one or two tonight and then do, you know, it doesn't all have to happen tonight.
It doesn't have to all happen tonight. We can add this on to our next agenda also to continue this discussion. But
I think it's a good idea since we're missing two members and they may very well want to be on some of these committees. But do we want to talk about which ones we might want to form, or should we just wait? I think we should wait.
Maybe you could talk about what your interest is.
Okay.
That way we can.
Okay. Stuart, how about you?
Well, that's right. You know, one of the things I've had a problem with since I've been on the PWAB is we seem to get the information. I was sick for 3 days this week. Unfortunately, it was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. So here I go in, and she says, you want your packet? Here it is. So I'd like to get the information a little more if we're going to do this thing. So we've got time to analyze. I analyze on the Internet. I talk to other people. I do a lot of research. So I'm kind of informed, hopefully, a little bit.
Okay,
I think that's a good idea. And, of course, my area is water, and I like, you know, here we are. And I subscribe to many different water news.
Well, one thing I might say, Stuart, is not only do you need to be responding to what's on the agenda that night, you might be generating what will be on a future agenda as a result of your subcommittee, if you follow what I'm saying. If there's a concern in the community you see under the water conservation, then you have it placed on the next agenda.
I can see where that would work. So yeah. I don't see why not. You know, water conservation is a real hot topic. You can't pick up anything now that doesn't have something in it, from the Bay News to Times or to the Internet. They talk about it all the time, and here we are. And, you know, we have the opportunity to identify what issues are, but it takes a little research to do that. Mm-hmm. And why not pull some of the people in, like this gentleman that was just here that sent all of us emails, and say, okay, you don't think we're doing it. Why?
Chris?
Yeah, I think it'll be a benefit to have some subcommittees, though I don't know how many we can actually create, being there's seven of us here, and we don't want to create too many different. But I would be interested in combining possibly something like the streets and sidewalks along with traffic and transportation. Obviously, with Stu liking the water part of it, we would need a group that would like to go that direction and a group that would like to go the traffic direction. But but maybe in order to do that is just combining, like maybe it would be water and wastewater together, and then streets and sidewalks with traffic and transportation. Just maybe keep it a little broader so that we can discuss a little more in each of those.
Okay. And I think we need to give our two absent members a shot at this, too. So it's probably a good idea to bring it back and discuss it again at our next meeting and perhaps make some appointments at that time.
Do you have any thoughts on
that? Oh, no, I'm really in favor of it because it would just help us know, help me personally, know more about what the issues are and go into them in more depth instead of just the meeting up here. And I like the idea of consolidating them. Why would traffic and transportation, a question probably to Rob, would traffic and transportation and transit, would those sort of all be together too? Or are there...
I just picked major subject areas. We can mix and match them any way that we desire.
We want to.
Yeah.
Well, since Chris was talking about combining some of them together, I was just wondering if you combine, for example, streets, sidewalks, and traffic and transportation, is there room in that to put in transit, or is that making that subcommittee too big?
I think they're all related. I think you could easily do that.
How about surface and underground?
Surface and underground, yeah.
Okay.
Rob, a franchise could be Charter or AT&T, telecommunications stuff, too.
Except that we don't really have any authority over those anymore.
And the council doesn't either.
No.
Okay.
One that I left off, probably, and it wasn't on purpose, was street trees. So just want to make sure that because we do have a citizens tree committee, but they're a voluntary committee. They're not really associated with the city. But if there were a street tree subcommittee, they could liaise with the citizens tree committee too, and it might give some more dialogue in that area. So. Just want to throw that. I did forget street trees. Just wanted to bring that up.
I think before we start combining and cutting down into like two or three, maybe we need to poll our other members and see what they might be interested
okay.
in, which I'd be happy to do. But can I do that as the chair? Or does it need to be in a public meeting?
If you met with those two alone, it would be less than a quorum, so you could discuss that, but you couldn't. Outside of this meeting,
right. Okay.
Share that with the group.
Thank you.
Well, and maybe just make them aware for
yes,
the next meeting
right.
that we're going to be discussing.
I'll prepare them for
okay.
it. Thank you.
And Rob, just for my benefit, what are some of the capital projects that would
be? So a lot of our capital projects are associated with some of these other areas, water, we build water lines, build nutmeg storage tank, wastewater, building a new water reclamation facility, that's a capital project. Sort of the non-traditional public works capital projects might be the fire station, might be the rehab of the North T Pier, might be the... I wouldn't call that a capital project. We're doing some minor... work in the city hall, so that's not really a capital project. I'd say that's more maintenance. But it's kind of the building and grounds types of projects that you might not see on the other list. Park improvements, those would be capital projects. The bridge, the...
So those parking lots, would that also count?
Yeah. Yes, if we built a parking lot, that would count.
It's anything that's parking constructed ground. New, basically,
yeah.
as opposed
but
to me.
Many of the capital projects we do are already associated either with streets, water, or wastewater.
And you get the fun of dealing with Rick back.
Anything else, Rick?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's move on to item C4, and that's the review of water and sewer rate discount program.
C3, I don't think there's any motion needed.
No,
we'll just move it on, continue it for the next meeting.
Correct. Thank you.
I don't think we need a motion to do that.
Thank you.
This is another item that came out of our water rates study. Based on discussion with this board and with City Council, and that was a desire to create a program that offered discounts to for water rates. Unless Bruce is really interested in this item, he doesn't have to stick around for this. It was mainly the... Okay. Have fun. I saw the pump sitting out there.
Oh, yeah. We're ready to go. Thank you.
They're going to be dewatering one of the tanks at early in the morning. So about 3:30 in the morning, Bruce has to be out there to go to work. Anyway, sorry. This was a program that came out of the desire of both this board and the City Council and also the community. As we discuss in a variety of meetings, we know that discount programs can't be funded by rates. But what they can be funded by is a variety of other fees that we collect, such as late charges, penalties, non-sufficient check charges, applications. And in fiscal year 13-14, that amounted to a little over $97,000 that we collected there that could be used to offset payments. If all, and the other thing that we talked about was to not have the city income qualify people, but to use the PG&E care program so that if they qualified for that, they would qualify for our utility program. If all 967 Morro Bay residents that are on that program signed up, that $97,000 would equate to $8.42 a month reduction. Not a huge amount, but it is at least something that we could offer to the community, and we don't know if everybody will sign up for the program. So the finance division suggests that we base the amount of revenue on the previous fiscal year's receipts. We have one application period so that we know how many people that are going to be applying, and then they are good for that year. And then we reassess and reapply every year. And the outline of that program from our finance department is attached. That draft program is attached. And really, that's all I have in presentation. And be happy to discuss or answer any questions that I might be able to.
Stuart?
Rob, is there any grant money available for that, as there is some of the other programs for the... let's call them financially handicapped people.
Potentially, you could use CDBG public service money for that. Our allocation is somewhere around less than $10,000 a year is what we would get. So that's the only thing off the top of my head that I can think of that may qualify. But we would have to use that money, we would have to do income verification for that.
I got a question on, like, such as secondary units. Maybe they have one utility bill that's going to the main house. And is there another method to attach to this for people that wouldn't have a PG&E bill?
It would have to require the city to do income verification.
Income verification is a costly thing. How does PG&E do it?
They require financial statements, you know, W-2s, tax returns. People are sensitive to bringing that in to and sharing with other people, I know.
Okay. I got a quick question. The $97,609 that you collect from these fees, do they go in the water fund or the general fund?
Water fund.
Okay. So basically, I hate to say it, they're treated the same way as water rates are, because they're what's funding your water fund, correct?
They play a portion of the water fund, but it's really the only legitimate funds that we have available.
The only legal fund. Yeah. I follow that.
We could use general fund money. I mean, you can use outside money to fund it, but there really is no excess general fund money.
You know, I told you I was going to be an unpopular guy tonight, and this is part of it, because I see this as a noble cause. I really do. But I also see it as the city getting in the entitlement program arena, which are the kind of decisions 15 years from now, people go, what were they thinking? You know, when you create these kind of systems, you're going out and doubling everybody's water rate, and I was on board with it. And all of a sudden now you're saying, gee, we'll go back to 20% of the community and give them a break. And it's not the money amount. It really isn't. It's the principle that there's a lot of people out there, probably not even on the CARE program, who are going to struggle to meet those. You know, don't get me wrong, I live a decent life, and whether the water rate goes up or not, it's not going to kill me one way or the other, but there's a lot of people out there. And what I see is this is a little bit exclusionary to me, that, gee, if you're in the PG&E care program, you're in like Flynn, so to speak, and you get this break from the city. And again, it's not the money amount. It bothers me because it does take from the water fund. If it was going to the general fund, I could sit there and say, well, the city wishes to be benevolent, but you just went to the ratepayers and asked them for doubling their fees because you needed the money in the water fund, and all I see is this is an outflow. I have a tough time with that. I really do. That's why I wanted to know the question of actually where this money winds up when you go through this kind of deal. In any case, that's my time for tonight.
Dan? Rob, is there any kind of water rate discount that the city helps the ratepayers with at this point?
We have a similar program now. I think we have 10 customers that take advantage of it. It has a maximum cap of, I think, $10 a month on it. And it is actually probably if we instituted it today, could not be used because it is funded from rates.
So this is all funded from penalties.
Penalties. And I must add, the penalties are not relied upon for the operation of the water fund. We don't budget.
No, I realize that, but it does offset future increases.
Correct.
As a result.
Okay.
So the amount that the monthly discount amount is based on at the end of the year, how much you made for that year, how much you collected into that fund, and so that would be the monthly discount for that year.
For the next year.
But it wouldn't change during that year, and at the end of the year it would be re-looked at.
It would be re-looked at every year, yes.
Okay. I don't have any problem with it, actually. I think there are some people who need help who are too proud to ask, and so I don't think this is really giving a lot of money away.
And I agree with you, Jan. I was glad to see you do this because I know we heard comments about this at our meeting, and the council heard comments about it, and there were over 900 people who protested the rate increase. So I know it's going to hit some people hard, and I'm glad to see that we're doing something because I know the council said they were going to look at this, and I'm glad to see us doing it. So I would make a motion that we pass this on with our approval.
I don't know. We probably don't have any public comment, but
we don't.
We might want to open it up for public comment, just for a formality. I'm sorry.
All right. Sorry. Well, I'm new at this.
Yeah.
I'm still feeling my way along. Noah, you can talk if you'd like. Okay. All right. Formally, we've opened and closed public comment.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad you're on top of me. Okay. Anyway, I think we've all, have we all spoken? Or do you have another?
I have one more comment on it. I got on the balance sheet for last year. I can't find that. I imagine it's a sub account out of one of the other accounts. It's out of water, is what you say.
Yes.
It's in the water revenue, so it's a sub-account of water revenues where you keep track of fees and penalties.
Correct.
And that kind of stuff. Okay, so.
And we might call it something weird in our budget, like mitigation fees, which doesn't make sense to me, but that's where that money goes to.
Okay, I'm just wondering what line item it was because I spent a few minutes looking to try to find it.
I can send you the number. That'll help you find it quicker, too,
okay.
The line number on it.
It would. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, then I'm going to make my motion now that we recommend approval and pass this on to the council. Item C4.
I'll second it.
Any more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Thank you. All right, the meeting is adjourned, and our next meeting, Rob is going to tell us about. He's going to schedule an not a regular meeting, but
a special meeting. Sometime probably mid-July. If you have any known constraints, if you could email those to me, and I won't select those as dates to suggest to the rest of the group. So I'd appreciate that if you think about it, look at your calendars, and
And our next scheduled meeting will be Thursday, August 20th. So, but we'll have one in between.
Thank you, everybody.
All right.
I appreciate it.
All right. The meeting is adjourned.